All boats are aligned. Attention.
Welcome back to the Weigh Enough Rowing Podcast. We're your hosts and masters of ceremony. I am Sam, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Kate.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
Doing good, thanks. How are you?
So we've got a great episode today. We've got a guest, an Olympic hopeful. His name is Matt Brown, and Matt has got a really interesting rowing background. He was a walk-on at UCLA. It's a club program, not a varsity sport at UCLA, and ended up rowing at Yale, Oxford, Vesper, Marin. He is an Olympic hopeful. He was the U.S. national champion in the men's single in 2012. Wow. And he is a six-time world record holder on the erg.
Aspirations.
Yes.
He is squad goals. If you're not already following us on Instagram or Twitter, please follow us. We're at Short and Snarky Rowing on Instagram, or we're at Short and Snarky on Twitter. And we are the Short and Snarky Coxswains on Facebook. And also, since it's sprint season, Kate, don't forget to pick up your copy of the Short and Snarky Guide to Coxing and Rowing on Amazon.
I need to get some for all my coxswains this spring.
Yeah, we need to get those. So we will cut out the news story for you, and we'll just get right to Matt, because Matt has an awesome background and a great stories to tell. So we will get him on the phone. Hi, Matt. Are you there?
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hey, Matt.
Matt, how are you?
I'm excellent. It's a beautiful day out here in Marin.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it, and we're really jealous of the Marin weather.
Thank you.
Great. So I gave a little bit of an intro for you, Matt. What? Tell us about your rowing background. You've got a really interesting story, and we'd love to hear how you got started with rowing.
Yeah, so I was a track athlete and a soccer goalie in high school, and in track, I was always the kind of the explosive muscles, sprinter, high jump, that type of thing. And I went to UCLA my freshman year. I wasn't good enough to be a Division I track athlete. And I thought I was going to go out of my mind if I didn't start competing in something.
Yeah.
So I was walking first week, freshman orientation, and there was the crew out there, and they recruited me, and that's where I started rowing.
So you were the tall kid in the dining hall that the coach grabbed immediately?
I was the kid they ran over to, and I was like, oh, what is this sport? Rowing? What's a good physique for rowing? And they're like, yours.
Do you know what you look like? You. That's the perfect
yes.
thing. That's awesome. So you said that UCLA, they don't really have like a proper men's rowing program. So they had kind of a club sport, which I know there are a lot of those around the country. I mean, I know in ASU we have that. So how did you, I guess, keep your ambition during that? Like, knowing it's a club sport, and, you know, because I know that you can be competitive and you can compete against other teams and whatever, but how do you keep your ambition and all that stuff with that?
Yeah, so really, really quickly on in my freshman year, I, just like with a lot of rowers, I fell in love with the sport, and I knew that I wanted to take it to the highest level. I wanted to be an Olympian, and I wanted to have a coach who'd been there and done that, and I wanted to do it at a place that could sort of foster that that talent. So I started looking. Even November of my freshman year, Thanksgiving break, looking at places to go, and Yale ended up being the place, and one of the new coach there, John Pescatore, he and I started talking, and he said, Matt, your athletic talent's rare, and when he told me that, I was like, wow, here's someone who believes in me before many other people can see it. That's where I've got to be. That's where I've got to go.
Wow.
So how hard was it? Did he recruit you then to come over, or did you have to apply and go through the normal admissions process?
That's actually a funny story. So because I was a transfer student, you're not allowed to recruit a transfer student.
Oh, okay.
So I never got the whole, getting the all-expenses-paid trip to the campus and having them show you around when you're in high school. all that stuff. So Coach Pescatore said, look, if you will pay your own way to come out here, then I might be able to get you an interview with an admissions counselor. So as this kind of young, naive freshman, I said, okay, I'm all in. And so I bought my plane ticket. I flew out to New Haven, and I met the coach. I met the admissions counselor. Probably by that time, I'd already started the application process. But looking back on it, if I knew how slim the chances were, I think there were over 1,000 transfer students, and they accepted 23 of us.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know how slim the chances were, but I didn't apply for housing or anything to UCLA the next year. So I had already kind of made my mind up, and it's lucky that they actually accepted me.
Wow, that's a really cool story.
That's kind of a one in a million, or at least a 23 in a 1,000 shot there. So after Yale, it looks like, and just talking with you and reading your bio, then what was next? So you went to Vesper after that?
After Yale, I graduated in 2006, and I went straight to Oxford for 2 years. So I did a two-year master's program there, 2007 and 2008, and I was part of the OUBC, Oxford University Boat Club, who's actually racing tomorrow. That's the boat race, yep. Men and women on the same day. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Go dark blue. So I rode there for a couple years. I was the vice president there, and I still had the rowing bug after that. Still felt like I could continue pursuing it, had a passion for it, and wanted to keep on going. So that's when I moved to Vesper.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So how competitive is it for an American? And I know a lot of American college students, especially rowers at the elite level, end up going to Oxford or Cambridge for either postgraduate or master's programs. How tough is it to get into those programs and to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's very similar to the whole process of just getting in as an undergrad and then balancing the workload of your studies and rowing at the same time. It's very similar as a graduate, which is what most of the rowers are at Oxford and Cambridge, they're graduate students. Is it competitive? Yeah, super competitive, both to get in and to row there. But, you know, for anyone out there, any of the listeners thinking about it, I would absolutely recommend going full force behind it, trying to do it.
And it's good that you bring that up, because a lot of our listeners are of the high school and, you know, collegiate level, whether they're, you know, younger college or maybe they're in their junior year, maybe they're considering what their graduate programs are going to be. So it is really cool to hear, you know, to keep going and what the steps are and, you know, what's good for you, you know, because that's what you did, Matt, is you just, it sounds like you just made all the right choices for you, because you've got this kind of insatiable thirst for being competitive and I think that you just kind of tried to stay on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe look at it a different way. I don't think I made all the right choices. I think when you step back and you look at it, like you look at the, you know, this resume and the rowing accolades and everything, on paper it looks great, and it's sort of the same thing when you see a person rowing in the Olympic final and they make it look so easy and so effortless. But what you don't see is the mountains of failures that went into that, that led up to that. And all of the races that you didn't win and all of the boats that you didn't make and all of the times where you were in the middle of a 2K test and you weren't mentally tough enough and you just quit. And for me, it's this journey that's really, you go through a lot of the wrong choices to figure out what is the right path and that's how you get to be a seasoned competitor.
I agree with that. And I that's a really good point, because on paper, you're right. It does seem like you made all of the right moves, but of course we don't know all of the hurdles that you had to leap over to get there.
So what?
Exactly, yeah. And the thing is, with rowing especially, it's a sport where the work that you put in, it's pretty directly proportional what you get out of it. So as long as you as long as you have a passion for it, as long as you enjoy doing it, then keep on doing it and just be open to where it can take you and the places you can go. You never know how your journey is going to unfold, but if you love doing it, then by all means, keep on doing it.
That's great. So what advice would you have? A lot of our listeners are high school or college students. As far as thinking about making that leap from a high school or college level of rowing to an elite type level of rowing, what do you think it takes, and what advice might you have for people that are thinking about it going forward?
I think it takes a lot of patience, and it takes a lot of determination, and it takes a lot of grit. So what I mean by the patience is that if you want to be at the elite level in rowing or in anything else, you have to put in a certain amount of time to be at that level, not only to get up to that level in the first place, but also when you're kind of circling around that level, every year you have to put in maybe 1,200 or more hours, 1,400 hours to be at that level. And you can't just go from high school where you're training for 500 hours a year and all of a sudden start doing 1,200 hours. You just take it stepwise and maybe add 10% of volume and intensity every single year and build up to that. So you need patience. You need grit because, like I said, man, if you look back at everything that you had to go through and the things that didn't go your way and the amount of times that you've fallen down, you've got to have a lot of grit to be able to get back up, to keep on going, to not get frustrated and disappointed. Just think those are natural things. They're going to happen. Mark them in your calendar.
Yeah.
And keep on going.
I remember I had this coach that told us, he used to say, he's like, you know, you're going to have a whole bunch of bad rows and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, major athletes, elite athletes can tell you like exactly what date, what boat they were in, that they had like a perfect stroke or like a good set or something like that, like that they had a good row. They can tell you dates, times, all that stuff. But I think it's the same. And when I coach the kids, I tell them that, you know, a bad row or a bad race doesn't define you as a rower or as a person. I was like, you know, just use that and move forward.
It's totally true. I mean, I've been rowing for like 15 years now, and I still have learned to row days.
Yeah, yeah, where you're just like, ugh.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Even in 1 week, if you, let's say you have 5 practices in 1 week, you're going to have one practice that is bad, and you're going to have one practice that's amazing. That's pretty standard. And
yeah.
One of the secrets that most elite athletes have learned is that those bad practices are not actually a bad thing. Like, if you fail on a 2K test, a lot of times we've learned to equate failure with, you know, being stupid or not trying hard enough. But the thing is, a lot of elite athletes will actually seek out that point where they're on the edge of failing, and sometimes they do fail.
Yeah.
And that's how you figure out what is your perceived limit and how do I keep on pushing it.
Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, speaking of that, we were just talking about this before we got you on the phone, but one of the things that I often struggle with, and especially with coaching and some of my athletes, to get people either into their head or out of their head when they're on an erg and they're, you know, people just bonk in the middle of a 2K, or you have a bad row and you get frustrated. What do you recommend for people, how to either get into your head or get out of your head if you need to?
Well, the thing about a lot of that deals with the stress response, and when you get stressed out, when you're in a stressful situation, how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
The thing that most athletes at the top level will tell you is that it's not about getting rid of the butterflies in your stomach. It's about getting the butterflies to fly in formation.
Okay.
So you're not trying to get rid of the stress. Stress is actually a good thing. It's really physiologically helpful thing that your body is trying to do to set you up for your peak performance. It does some amazing things with your breathing and your, you know, cardiac output and all these hormones coursing through your veins. But what we do as athletes, we think, oh my gosh, I'm my heart rate is up and my palms are sweaty. Oh, I'm associating that with anxiety and maybe that I'm not going to perform that well. So I'm trying to get rid of that. It's not about getting rid of it. It's about being okay with it. It's about realizing, hey, my body is doing exactly what it needs to do to set me up for my best performance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good thing, because I know that in stressful situations for me, what I do is I know that I just put my head down and try to get through it. You know, the whole Winston Churchill, if you're going through hell, keep going. And that's yeah. my thing, because I can always cry about it later. And I will. And I will. So, yeah, I know that's my thing. And I know that everybody, you know, deals with stress differently. And I think it's just that self-awareness piece where you're just kind of aware of what your capabilities are and what, you know, how you deal with things. That's a really good point.
A lot of it too deals with experimentation. So especially for the younger athletes, you watch these Hollywood movies and these sports movies where you think, oh, you know, the football players before a big game, they get all pissed off and mad and all that, and they're banging their heads against the wall and that type of thing. So that must be how a competitor gets ready to compete.
Yeah.
And the thing is, maybe that works for you, but maybe it doesn't. So you've got to experiment with all kinds of, you know, drawing on different emotions and seeing what is it like if I do this 2K when I'm super happy and laughing and jovial and excited, or what is it like when I do get pissed off and angry and I channel that energy? It's different for different people, and you have to channel all kinds of different emotions, and you have to experiment to figure out what that is for you.
Yeah. And you know, you were just talking about how people get prepped for football games or something. Do you have any pre-race rituals that you do? Like, do you listen to, like, Celine Dion or Mariah Carey and get loose?
How did you know?
I had a hunch.
Yeah. So I do, and that has changed so much since I was in even high school, when I was running hurdles and getting ready for those races. Mm-hmm. I was doing something that completely wasn't working for me, and I didn't realize that until later on in the game. So for me, my pre-race ritual, I know for me to get my best performance, I've got to be feeling happy, excited, loose, relaxed. And if I am feeling angry or mad, usually those negative emotions, they typically signal some kind of unmet need. Okay. And that can be psychological or it can be physical. So if you do have a negative emotion, you ask yourself, well, what is that need that's not being met, and can I meet that need? So maybe you just need a power bar or something like that because you're hungry and your body's saying, I'm going to get hangry because I need my blood sugar to go up.
You're going to turn into a Snickers commercial, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really need to be racing for that to happen. So, yeah. So as far as nutrition goes before races, do you usually eat or do you wait?
On race day, you never want to do something new that you haven't tried before. And yeah. I made that mistake too. There, yeah. As a freshman in college, I read up about sodium bicarbonate buffering. So you take like a bunch of baking soda and you mix it up with water and you drink it before a race. And I thought, oh, that sounds good. I'll try that before this 2K test. That is bad news if you're not used to it. So you've got to, on race day, you've got to stick to something that you've been doing, that you're used to, that works for you, that that's normal for you. So if you want to experiment, do it sometime before race day.
Yeah, do it on other things, like before you have, you know, whatever. So you've participated in a lot of different boat clubs and a lot of different races. A question that we like to ask all of our guests is, what is your favorite rowing memory? It could be from anywhere, and you don't have to name names if you don't want to.
Probably my favorite rowing memory was the first time I went sub-6 on a 2K.
Okay.
Whoa.
And the reason is that it took me a really long time to do it. Even in college, I wasn't the fastest guy. I wasn't the strongest rower on the team. But I kept on training, I kept on putting in time. And the whole time I knew I could do it. I knew it was in me. But if you haven't done something yet, it feels like it's just this, the weight of the world on your shoulders. It's a monkey on your back. And I did it at Vesper. And the first time I did it, it was such a joy to do that, to know that that was all me. It was all the training I put in, and it took me a long time to do it, but, you know, I did it. And then after that, it's like once you get over that mental hurdle, every single test after that was like, oh, he's faster and faster and faster. So,
what's your 2K time now?
5:54.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
That's pretty fast.
That is faster than I could do. And then what would you say is an embarrassing rowing memory? Now, it doesn't have to be from you. It could be from, you know, somebody else. You don't have to name names again.
Well, I'll name some names here.
Okay.
So this was.
We like that even better.
We like that better, yeah.
Anywhere along Boathouse Row, in the mornings especially, it's a fight to get some space on the dock because so many people are launching or coming in. And so the coach there, Mateo Bartman, said, all right, you guys, you can't spend more than 30 seconds getting your boat down, putting it in the water, sitting down, locking in your oars, and pushing off. So he literally had us practicing getting into our boat and shoving off the dock. Okay. And he was timing us. And I was like, well, I'm going to show him, and I'm going to show everyone on the team here who's watching that I can do this really fast. So I sprinted down, and I got in my boat, and I put my oars in, and I shoved off the dock as quickly as I could, and the one thing I forgot is to lock down my oar locks.
Oh, no.
So in front of about 30 people, I went straight over. I jumped the boat over and was bobbing up and down in the water with the rest of the team laughing at me.
Well, you showed them how fast you were, so, I mean, mission accomplished. But it just, you know, just paying attention to details is definitely something that you have to do.
So the last question, Matt, we ask everyone this, and you have been quite the decorated athlete, beating Cambridge and all of that. Do you still have all of your rowing medals? And if you do, where do you keep them?
I do. I have them all in like a little room where I have all my rowing clothes and everything. I go there before practice in the morning to, you know, get dressed, get ready. And I have them there because they're nice little reminders of, you know, what you achieved, what you accomplished. And if you're the one who did it, you know everything that that went into getting that medal or getting that shirt or whatever. So it's just a nice reminder. I think everyone should do that. You should have positive stuff around you and, you know, notes that inspire you, quotes that inspire you, and you know, have it all around you.
Yeah, we've heard some really interesting ones, like Meredith from Concept 2. She takes all the ribbons off of her medals, and she puts the medals on her Christmas tree. And then I guess Dr. Rowing hangs his up in his bathroom. Those have been my favorites so far.
The one thing that the one accolade that's not in my little trophy case is the world record certificate I got from Concept 2, and that one is actually on the fridge with some magnets pasted on.
Oh, that is fantastic.
It's right below the little thing that my baby girl got me for Father's Day that says, world's greatest dad.
Did everybody hear that sound? It was the sound of melting hearts everywhere. That was a nice little thing. That is so cute. World's greatest dad, but I'm also a world record holder.
Exactly.
That is so awesome. Well, Matt, any I guess, parting advice to people? Can people reach out to you on Twitter if they want to ask you questions or anything?
I'm at Focal Rowing, F-O-C-A-L, on Twitter.
Okay.
And definitely like interacting with people there. Happy to help any young, aspiring athletes out there who want to go out and live the dream. And for anyone, especially the young kids who are thinking about, do I want to do this? Do I have what it takes? I would say recognize that you have to find out exactly what it is that you have a passion for, and then you have to devote yourself to being as good as that as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And I realize that a passion, a lot of people don't know this, but passion comes from the Latin root word to suffer. So a lot of the time, you're going to have to suffer for what you really love to do. And if you can hang in there long enough, if you can stick with it, that's how you will achieve what you want to do.
Wow. So that's as good a place as any to, wow, thank you. I feel really motivated. Now I want to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, I'm ready to get on the erg.
Yeah, ready to get on the erg, absolutely.
If I can pull a sub-9 right now, yeah.
That
would be something.
I'm going to pull a sub-9. Yeah, well, thank you so much, Matt, for being with us and sharing some insight and telling us about you. We really enjoyed the conversation, and thank you so much again.
Thanks for being on, Matt.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, right, thanks.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. He's one of the good ones, I'll tell you.
And yeah.
It's obvious that he went to Yale and Oxford.
Obvious, yeah. I really liked all of the stuff that he was, you know, he really seemed to care about, you know, like what's going on. Like, you know, he was in your shoes. Like, you know, if you guys are in high school and college listening, he was in your shoes not too long ago. And, you know, if you can dream it, you can achieve it.
Yeah, I mean, really. And I think, you know, a lot of what he was talking about, whether you're going to row at an elite level or not, like most of us, we will never. You know, really the idea that what it takes to, you know, we was talking a lot about grit, and I think that's a big thing. And
that's a big thing, yeah.
He's very inspiring, let's say that.
He's very inspiring, and I really enjoyed talking to him. I'd love to have him come back on, absolutely. But if you guys, like he said, he's at Focal Rowing on Twitter. He's nice enough to, you know, want to take you guys' questions and interact with anybody. And maybe you guys can swap war stories or something like that. That'd be cool. Or you guys can ask him. It'd be like a Dear Abby type thing. But yeah, so, that was our show. Thank you so much. If you're not already following us on Instagram or Twitter, we're at Short and Snarky Rowing on Instagram and at Short and Snarky on Twitter. Don't forget to pick up your copy of the Short and Snarky Rowing Short and Snarky Guide to Coxing and Rowing on Amazon.
It is that time of the year.
It is that time of the year. And if you like us, if you like our podcast, please keep listening. Subscribe, rate, and review. Write us a review, please. We love hearing about what you guys like because this show is for you. And send us an email with any comments, questions, concerns, or maybe you just want somebody to talk to. shortandsnarkyrowing@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the water.
Last two strokes. That's 1, 2. Way enough. Let it run. Blades down.